Happy New Year, everybody. It's great to see all of you in 2008. I'm Carla Brennan, one of the teachers here. One thing I found out this week is that sevens are really easy to turn into eights. I've had to already do that several times, writing checks and different things. So eventually I'll get trained. Tonight I want to talk about peace. I led the New Year's Eve event here a few days ago, and the theme was it was set up as a peace meditation. So that was kind of the framework for the evening, and I didn't really give a talk, but you know, alluded to peace, read quotes about peace. So this is my opportunity to elaborate on that a little bit, since I was thinking about it a lot during that evening and during life. It's an important topic, obviously. This time of year, it comes up a lot around the holidays, a time of thinking about peace, wishing for peace. Of course, it's something we wish for all year round for most of us. And as I was sitting down today to try to think about what I wanted to talk about, it seemed like, God, this is a huge topic. I have no idea how I'm going to narrow it down or what I really want to talk about. So I picked out a few different points or things I wanted to review. I don't know that anything I'll say will be new, but it hopefully will be a reminder or an inspiration or a help or something, I hope. I'm going to borrow a quote to be the formal name of this talk. I'm borrowing this quote, which is, "There is no path to peace. Peace is the path. There is no path to peace. Peace is the path." So one thing I'm hoping to inspire is to invite you to bring peace as an intention for this year, probably along with some other ones as well. What does it mean to have peace, peacefulness, bringing peace into yourself and the world as an intention? It's certainly something that's something that's needed, but that seemed even inadequate, something that the world is in desperate lack of right now, something that really needs to be cultivated and given attention to by all of us. So how do we choose peace? How do you choose peace? I have a quote here from John Lennon. "If everybody demanded peace instead of another television set, then there would be peace." And I think there's some truth to that. I spent the holidays with my sister, who has a big high-definition plasma TV. I found myself thinking, I really want one of those. But hopefully I want peace more. And, you know, the Buddhist path, this meditation center, sometimes I think we're in the business of peace. It's our mission, more or less. I was also thinking today about some of you may know of the Garrison Institute. It's an institute on the banks of the Hudson River in upstate New York. It used to be a Catholic monastery that was bought by a bunch of Buddhists, and it now holds retreats as well as conferences, and a lot of them are aimed at promoting peace in different levels of society. And right across the river, you can see West Point. So it's kind of a joke there that on one side is the War College and on the other side is the Peace College. So this is also kind of a peace school here in Santa Cruz. So when we talk about peace in our culture, it usually comes up in two contexts. One is inner peace. Of course, that's what we talk about a lot here with meditation and Buddhist practice. And then also world peace, or peace in society, or throughout the planet in different ways. So really, I see these inner peace versus, you might say, world peace as really a a matter of scale and a matter of skillful means. They're really a one continuum. Outer peace, we can have or seemingly have some sort of outer peace in our life. Our life can seem, at least in our experience, I mean, of course, if we look at the world, there's always tremendous conflict and war and violence going on. But even if in our little realm of our own personal world, it can seem relatively peaceful, and yet we can find that we have a lot of inner struggle and inner conflict. So outer peace does not guarantee inner peace. And, of course, the opposite of is if we've really attained true, authentic inner peace, then we can have that despite what is going on in the world around us. There can be a lot of conflict and upheaval and drama around us, and yet that peace can be sustained. This is from Nehru. Peace is not merely an absence of war. It is also a state of mind. Lasting peace can only come to peaceful people. So we're in the business of creating peaceful people with hope of having a ripple effect beyond just individuals, beyond this sangha, beyond this building, beyond our personal lives. And I would say world peace is built on the accumulation, you might say, the gathering, the of authentic individual inner peace. And I would add to that the ability to be a peacemaker. An ability to be a peacemaker comes from the wisdom and the power and the clarity of inner peace. This is from Jim Wallace, a Christian minister. Anyone can love peace. But Jesus didn't say, blessed are the peace lovers. He says peacemakers. He is referring to a life vocation, not a hobby on the sidelines of life. So what does it mean to make peace and making us being peacemakers a life vocation? So we need to develop our skill in being a peacemaker, which means bringing our inner peace into the world, sharing it, giving it away, engaging it in whatever ways we can, and that will look differently for different people. There will always be conflicts, I think, disagreements, disharmony, imbalance in our world, just because we're all many beings, many complex beings living together. But how do you approach this when it arises? How do you approach conflict, disagreements, imbalance, and so forth? Do you approach it with an understanding and an intention of bringing peacefulness to the situation? Or do you approach it with perhaps a maybe not even so conscious agenda about being right, about getting some perhaps personal need met over the larger need, or perhaps having some conditioned childhood agenda about forcing others to act in a certain way or getting certain results? So what is your real intention? What does it really mean to bring that into your life? I want to say, this is just a slight side comment I thought I'd make, and I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about this, but it's also important to discern between what I might call an authentic peacemaker versus a neurotic peacemaker. And the neurotic peacemaker is what some of us learn to do in the vortex of the dysfunction of our families. It's actually a form of conflict avoidance where we give up perhaps our own needs in a way that is not healthy, and that we don't want to make waves, and we're trying to be nice, and we try to rescue people, and so forth. It's not what I'm talking about. So please, it's a good place to look into discerning the difference between a powerful, clear, wise form of peacemaking and a what I might call conflict avoidant. You know, a real The real exploration or the uncovering or the development or cultivation of peace means you really must move toward conflict, not away from it. Because that's where the peace is needed. And that conflict might be in your own consciousness, where a lot of our conflict is, or that conflict might be outside of us. But it's important for us to recognize it, to see it, and actually open to it and move toward it and understand it. It makes me think of also this, what I call the spiritual martial arts. I've always had an interest in martial arts, studied them some, not very adept. Always had a fantasy of being a really good martial artist, but that hasn't happened yet. But the spiritual martial arts, the thing I like about them, one of the things is certainly they're based on the premise of non-harming and the premise of, again, moving, opening up and moving toward. When something comes at you, when aggression comes at you, when an assault comes towards you, instead of, if there's a, you're invited to actually move, open and move toward it. And you can actually learn to respond to that with a mind of peace and non-aggression and non-harming. The early Buddhist monks in China were, a lot of them were wandering monks, and they were vulnerable to attacks by bandits and thieves and so forth. So they learned martial arts in order to protect themselves and to protect the people who were assaulting them. The idea was that they would be able to disarm without harming others and also protect themselves. So I often think of that as a model for our own process of cultivating peace. It's very powerful. So I'm going to ask you a question. You can just throw out answers. I'm wondering what words you associate with peace. When you reflect on peace, what related words do you associate with peace?
Happiness.
Tolerance.
Interdependence.
Negotiation.
Freedom.
Emptiness.
What?
Emptiness.
Loving kindness. Calm.
Calm? Okay, these are all, there's many more. These are all great words. Part of the point of this is I want to point out how all of these are, all of these qualities of bodhicitta, the awakened heart and mind, are interrelated. And what's important to, again, when we think of peace or we think of peace in the outer world, do you see these qualities within you? Some of these qualities that were mentioned here, do you see them within you? Because that's where we begin. We begin by seeing them, by cultivating them, by encouraging them, by recognizing them within us. Dina Metzger wrote a wonderful piece, I think it's a wonderful piece, called Personal Disarmament. It's in the book Ordinary Magic. It's probably other places too, where she talks about, she's a very active peace activist, and among other things, and she came to the realization one day that she was actually warring within her, that there were many different wars and prejudices and oppressions being played out within her own psyche, and that she became very attentive to what it meant to disarm the various factions within her being. So what's in the way of your own inner peace? What's in the way of your own inner peace? I'm going to mention a few things, and you may have some things to add to the list. From the Buddhist standpoint, our natural state is one of peace. Our natural being is one of peace. Our Buddha nature, our bodhicitta, is by its inherent qualities a peaceful it has within it all the qualities that make for a peaceful experience and a peaceful life. So some of the things that get in our way would be our distractedness and our agitation. And I think that's probably familiar to many of us. Our minds can be very active and bouncing around. This is often called monkey mind. When we're agitated and distracted and our mind is going all over the place, we're often not very peaceful. Often our heart and mind is also what I call hijacked by our conditioned emotional patterns, conditional behavior patterns, then themselves again are not very skillful or very peaceful. Take fear, for example. If we have a pattern of fear, I spent a lot of time with family recently and observing family members, and one family member who I could really feel how vulnerable they felt. And in this vulnerability, they felt easily threatened by things. And in that feeling easily threatened by things, often anger and blame and also prejudice, racism, different things would come out from this very old pattern of fear. And related that to our patterns of worry. I saw in another family member a very chronic pattern of worry and anxiety and self-judgment. Not very peaceful for either of them. And also patterns of anger, of resentment, of a habit of hearing things as judgments and therefore lashing out. And a fundamental pattern that doesn't bring us much peace is wanting things to be different than they are. That's an endless recipe for lack of peace. Because things are like they are, and yet we can fight them, we can struggle, we can resist, and yet what is arising right now is what's arising right now. Expectation is the recipe for disappointment, and many of us are caught up in that. And in the Buddhist text, sometimes what's considered to be the greatest obstacle to peace is hatred. Hatred is different than anger. Hatred is really a story of aversion, of dislike, of rejection, of separation, of an intense nature, of a wanting to get rid of destroy, and to a threat or to what we don't like, whether it's inner or outer. So it's again important to see some of these patterns, because these are again all patterns in which our practice begins to address, our practice begins to reveal, our practice begins to give us alternatives to, our practice begins to unhook us from these patterns that promote endless suffering and also a lack of peacefulness. Another little caveat I want to throw in here is that if you feel you can only find peace or primarily find peace through avoiding things, through shutting things out, through shutting things down, through escaping from, then I'm afraid you have a problem, that this will only be a rather shallow and unstable peace. Now, I'm not against, spending time, however we might do it. Going on retreat can be that to a certain degree. We put aside a lot of the things that actually causes conflict. Going out into nature can be that way. There can be a lot of actually valuable time where we do put things aside a little bit. So I'm not against that entirely by any means. But when it becomes your only and primary source, if you only feel you can feel peace when you're ignoring what's happening in the world, when you're kind of cutting yourself off from other people or other situations, you may get some relief, but for a while, but you're not developing wisdom, and you're not developing a deep and abiding and powerful type of peace. really in the crucible of life and interaction that wisdom arises, and that a more profound level of peace arises. Because I do hear that sometimes people say, I don't listen to that, I don't read that, I don't do that. And again, sometimes that can be a good break for us, but that's not true peace. It's not an abiding peace. This is from the Buddha. To enjoy good health, to bring true happiness to one's family, to bring peace to all, one must first discipline and control our own mind. If a man can control his mind, he can find the way to enlightenment, and all wisdom and virtue will naturally come to him. So you must train in peace. So our meditation, in a sense, is a practice of peace, if it's done correctly. People sometimes bring into their meditation practice a lot of self-judgment, a lot of ambition and competition and striving that actually doesn't promote peace. But once we can see, perhaps we're bringing that in, we can bring more acceptance and love and care to ourselves and develop a profound sense of peace through our meditation. Meditation is the practice of being with what is, the mindfulness meditation. We are practicing over and over again to be with what is without reacting, without judgments, without struggling, without resisting. We're learning to open to direct experience fully and as it is. We're learning to connect, to have the courage to actually be here for our own life. And as practice develops, we go beyond merely self-interest and our small identification. We begin to open to a bigger picture, a bigger understanding of the connectedness, the interconnectedness, the boundarylessness actually of existence. We can stop much of that inner struggle, those inner wars that go on. And we learn to, instead of resist and fight what is, we learn to be present and respond with an open heart. And in time, with diligent practice and clear intention, a deep love and appreciation for life arises. And with that, of course, kindness and compassion. And we can also begin to break through to see the very nature of life, the very nature of heart-mind, the very nature of our being, and begin to break through into that field, which isn't a right word, but it's the only word I have right now, but into the field in which everything arises. In that field, there is no coming and going. In that field, there is ultimate silence and stillness and a peacefulness beyond measure. And that peacefulness, that groundless ground of being, coexists, co-mingles, is here all the time. It is here no matter what is arising in the field. And with more practice, we can rest in that in a natural, deep, and boundless, and very full kind of peace can arise. So we must experiment not only with our meditation, but in our life, and we experiment, explore, investigate. How do we actually practice this peace in all situations and all interactions? Our time on the cushion is really important, but then we have to go out into life and actually practice it. And in many ways, there's many things to be said about that. A huge part of it is merely our intention. What is our intention as we go through life in any situation? Is it, again, our intention to have our own way? Is it our intention to avoid things? Is it our intention to be right all the time? Or is it in our intention to live harmoniously? Is it our intention to connect? Is it our intention to love? Is it our intention to bring about to add to situations in a way that promotes more happiness and more peace. And we're given sila, which is our guidelines for... Sila is usually translated as morality or ethics, but Ajahn Amaro translated as harmonious living, which I like very much. So our precepts of non-harming are the foundation of peace. And to review them very quickly, the short form is the precepts, but the guidelines about not killing, not stealing, not lying, and not misusing sex and drugs. So these can be wonderful ways to obviously live in harmony with ourselves and others. It's also important to remember that we don't practice just for ourselves. We come to practice for ourselves, and we're often looking for that peace for ourselves and looking for less stress and looking to feel better and all that other stuff for ourselves. But actually, you begin to see that you're not practicing for just yourself, but we're practicing for everyone. This is from Thich Nhat Hanh. As we cultivate peace and happiness in ourselves, we also nourish peace and happiness in those we love. And we actually begin to nourish peace and happiness in others around us without even being aware of it. I had a friend who'd done many, many retreats, a number of three-month retreats, and she told me a story. She was talking to her partner. She'd signed up for another retreat and said, "Oh, I don't feel like it. I just want to stay home. I've done enough. I don't feel like going on a retreat anymore." And her partner, who also goes on many retreats, says, "You know, I don't go on retreat for myself anymore. I go on retreat to create more peace in the world." And this is also from Thich Nhat Hanh. "And once we have the condition of peace and joy in us, we can afford to be in any situation, even in the situation of hell. We will be able to contribute our peace and serenity. The most important thing is for each of us to have some freedom in our heart, some stability in our heart, some peace in our heart. Only then will we be able to relieve the suffering around us." So peace and kindness and compassion, I want to say, can be somewhat contagious. So I really invite you, I hope to inspire you to be a model in the world to the best of your ability, which is always going to be imperfect. But to the best of your ability, be a model and to teach peace by how you actually live to the best of your ability. That's what the world needs right now. I recently read in a recent issue of Scientific American Mind magazine about, it was an article called "Pay It Forward, Animals Show Altruism Toward Strangers." And in this article, this has already been documented in humans, but they decided to document it in rats. And it turned out that they found that a rat, and this is the way you put it, a rat will help an unfamiliar peer get food if it has experienced a similar kindness in the past. So they were interested to see if it was built into our wiring, and rather than just our culture. And it does appear to be built in our wiring. When we've experienced kindness, we're more likely to share kindness with others. So I encourage you to, if a rat can do it, I think we can. I think I'll end there. So let's take a moment of silence and just breathe and relax and see if there's any questions or comments or sharings or insights you might want to bring to the group.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.